Whatever one calls the transformation, the Britain of 1900 to 1914 lagged, with a handful of explanations prevailing. As the inevitable consequence of having gone first, late 19th century Britain had a huge investment in plants, equipment, and early techniques that were outdated a generation or two later. Trouble also lay with the prominence of family firms run by engineers, tinkerers, and craftsmen ill-equipped to make the transition to economies of scale and mass marketing. The unplanned structure of railroads, in turn, was so widely acknowledged a drag by 1872 that both the British Inspector of Railways and The Economist called for state ownership as a remedy. Critics also dwelt on how the estate-owning elite of the time looked askance at industry, science, and technology, favoring instead the sort of education that trained the next generation to read Greek and Latin and prepare for Parliament or the Indian Civil Service. Planning and efficiency, alien in this infrastructure, became a much criticized deficit of early 20th century Britain. A group of leading academic and public figures who called themselves the Coefficients, organized to discuss possible solutions, including the formation of a national efficiency party under former Prime Minister Lord Rosebery. To sum up, by 1914, Britain's energy infrastructure had gone from dominance to incipient crisis in a single century. After World War II, when the coal industry was finally nationalized, one commentator described the nation's prime resource base this way: psychologically and physically, it was in a dreadful state. The legacy of the pre-war period was not only an old-fashioned, ill-equipped, and inefficient industry, but a store of bitterness and suspicion in the heart of the miner against the treatment he had received at the hands of the colliery owner. History repeats only in outline, so the United States must find its own pathway. But the general parallel is the basis for worry. The United States began the 21st century as the leading world economic power, but one already 80 to 100 years into an oil and gas-related dominion. Some symptoms of aging, like the displacement of manufacturing by finance, were already writ large in gross domestic product data. The conventional energy infrastructure, from pipelines to refineries, was already being described by private and government experts as partly outdated, difficult to overhaul, and vulnerable to attack and sabotage. But there was also an aging problem right at the heart of America's once globally preeminent oil and gas resources: the aging American energy infrastructure. Like the British of 1900, Americans a century later were slow to grasp the possibility that a steep price might have to be paid for the graying temples of what had once been a pioneering fuel culture and infrastructure. 21st century oil rests on more than corporations, plants, and pipelines. Any realistic catalog must also include government subsidies and preferences, entrenched bureaucracies and interest groups, foreign relationships, political party coalitions, and recurring Middle East war patterns. These will be discussed in the next two chapters. This one, however, will look at the physical and economic causes and symptoms of sclerosis: the sheer age of the U.S. oil industry, a zenith and depletion of U.S. oil and gas reserves, the so-called Hubbert Peak, the structural weakness of the huge U.S.-based international oil corporations, superannuated Goliaths desperate for Middle East oil, and the weakness of U.S. automotive giants, which have lost most markets save those for trucks, large cars, and sports utility vehicles. In the long history of oil in the United States, coal was a short-lived rival. Despite resources larger than Britain's, the United States never became a true coal culture. That was because settlers, for some 250 years after the settlements at Jamestown and Plymouth, kept moving west, clearing land and cutting down trees. Sheer availability made the new nation a wood-burning culture. Even in the centennial year of 1876, the United States took twice as much energy from firewood as from coal. Coal pulled ahead in the mid-1880s, cresting as a source of three-quarters of U.S. energy in 1910, when oil was already beginning its rapid military and industrial ascent. Unfashionable and dangerous to mine, coal put its industrial-era stamp on only a few regions, principally Appalachia and kindred southern portions of Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois.